It's a gas generator. 10-4, it's a gas generator. We'll get that over to Northern States Power right away. We'll see that information is relayed to them.
The sounds of a human drama. A 24-day struggle against the forces of nature, reflected in the shortwave transmissions of a makeshift station on top of one of the dikes. People moving items to help other people. A human effort, a backbreaking, hourless nights and endless days, of dramatic rescue and of constant tension. These are the sounds of a people at war, a war against nature and all her fury. The sounds of Minnesotans in the floods of 65. The Minnesota floods of 65 were not a complete surprise. A freezing rain in mid-December, a heavy January frost, and a record accumulation of snow, high in moisture content, were three factors which caused Weather Bureau hydrologist Joseph Stroob Jr. to predict on March 31st, record flooding in the state. And KSTP Radio began its preparations. A stringer network established, equipment readied, and the staff assigned on maps dotted with expected trouble spots. On April 2nd, the rivers of extreme southeastern Minnesota began to crest. Ed Cairo was there and reported. KSTP followed the governor, reported on emergency headquarters, checked continually with Stroob. And river names, Zumbro, Root, Blue Earth, were written for the first time. Equipment was tested on April 4th, and on Monday, staffers fanned out across the area to check trouble spots. On Tuesday the 6th, a new set of words, vermilion, flash flood, inundate, contamination. The flood was on in Hastings, and Bill McGivern reported from KSTP's amphibious duck.
Old-timers say they remember the devastating 1952 flood, that this one is much worse in Hastings. Hastings residents are waiting for dawn now. Will it be better or worse?
Dave Bedoin was constantly on the scene as the rampaging vermilion cut through Hastings at record levels.
Sandbagging operations on this Saturday are going on at an extremely accelerated pace. The reason being that the Mississippi is expected to overflow its banks sometime early this evening.
And at other points, the Red Cross began to evacuate families. In Jackson, Minnesota, the situation reached a crisis, and stringer Ron Muir, a postmaster, reported.
The city of Jackson lies in a valley. This apparently is the worst flood in our history, according to the knowledge of our old-timers about town. The water would seem to be somewhere in the neighborhood of a foot or so below the well tops now. If it goes much higher, our city water supply will be under contamination. The situation is really quite desperate this morning.
It was not less desperate in Mankato, where the Cottonwood River flung its fury at its confluence with the Minnesota. Staffers Tom Edwards, Morris Hurley, Tom Ocker, Bob Farinacci, Bill McGivern, and Don Beeler set up operations as the dikes began to breach. Hurley reported.
5,000 persons in North Mankato have been ordered to leave their homes by Mayor Roy Eckes. That brings to more than 7,000 the number pushed out by the high water.
And a councilman summed up the situation in a briefing.
Council meeting this morning, City Engineer Gene Avery gave a detailed account of the present status of the flood conditions. He emphasized the fact that when you are fighting the forces of nature, anything and everything can happen, that you are fighting against the unpredictable.
On April 6th, KSTP Radio presented its first 20-minute documentary on the floods. J.B. Eckert compiled and reported.
This report is not over. It will continue throughout the days and the weeks to come. KSTP News has flood observers on the scene now in various portions and centrally located in the state. We will continue to keep you well informed about the weather and about the floods. The winter and spring of 1965, the past and the beginning. This is J.B. Eckert, KSTP News.
Indeed, this was not the last special. Two more were to follow as the floods continued. Mankato resembled a war-torn city. Hurtling trucks, police, civil defense officials, hastily constructed light stands along the dikes. And rain, rain, and more rain. And through it all, KSTP staffers worked around the clock.
You could almost hear the silent cheer that went up this morning when the rain stopped in Mankato as the Minnesota River moved to within 1 foot of that predicted 30-foot crest, the highest in Minnesota history.
The attention of a nation focused on Mankato and its struggle.
Vice President Hubert Humphrey has just landed at Mankato Airport. He landed without Secret Service men. His itinerary is uncertain. The Vice President said he did not wish to be in Minnesota without surveying the disaster scene here at Mankato and up the Minnesota River.
And then, on Saturday, the 10th of April, it seemed that the crisis had passed. Don Beeler was on hand.
Their elders direct traffic, drive trucks, handle administrative tasks, cook, wait tables, and remember the record floods of 52. The young people are too young to remember, but they are not too young to imagine. They work as though the very hounds of hell are coming down the Minnesota River. Shoulder to shoulder and side by side, high school and college students, boys and girls, pass sandbags, shore up existing dikes, bend to the task with shovel and pick, and brace against the record floods of 65. It was thought the crest had passed early this morning. The Minnesota was holding steady, but the young people didn't stop. They patrolled the dikes, reinforced them where needed, piled onto trucks for that quick trip back to disaster headquarters and a bite of food, and then reboarded the bumpy vehicles for a trip back to the swollen Minnesota. Now with the rain, no one is sure if the crisis has passed. In Mankato, they are calling these youngsters river rats, and they are proud of them. They should be. For when it is all over, it will probably be said they saved the town.
But no one slept. To the north, the Crow and the Rum Rivers were rising. The Mississippi was beginning to overflow its banks. And as the Minnesota flowed on, KSTP radio equipment moved with it, battling the swift current, mooring to trees and street signs, and the second floor windows of houses over a mile from the river's normal banks. And everywhere, there was water and ice.
Can you tell me, sir, what are you trying to do here?
Well, we've got jam up of ice above this overflow bridge here, and it's going to take the bridge out, and maybe inside the next hour if we don't get this ice out. We can't reach the ice with a crane, and we're going to try and blast it out.
Downriver on the Minnesota, the next trouble spot, Chaska. The dikes breached. Water flowed toward the sewage plant and the new county building.
The sandbagging operations of the dike on the southern edge of Chaska was given up as futile about 2 p.m. this afternoon. Workers and residents in the area close to the levee watched helplessly as the water streamed over the sandbags and cut deep holes in the dike.
The governor, Carl Rolvaag, in his familiar flood-fighting garb, was on the scene. Don Beeler followed.
Governor Carl Rolvaag toured the area by amphibious duck today. He announced in Chaska that his request for a disaster area declaration over 39 Minnesota counties has been granted by the federal government. He pegged losses at over $20 million through Friday.
KSTP newsmen spent the Sunday in Hutchinson, Watertown, Chaska, Stillwater, Hastings, and St. Paul. Studio personnel kept in touch with officials on road conditions, supplies needed, dike workers, and other public service information which would be relayed.
Now, the area that I'm the most concerned with and I know the least about is around the Mendota Bridge, people who want to go south.
Mm-hmm.
What's the situation there?
Well, that Mendota Bridge is open, Paul, and that carries Trunk Highway number 55. And actually, it has been carrying a heavy amount of traffic, but the traffic has been moving over it very well. He let the people that live south of the river have it for their own use, because there's so many of them that do have to come into the cities to work and then go back out at night that the sightseers and other people should stay off that only major artery going south.
That is the only one.
It's the only one. The Cedar Avenue Bridge is closed. That's number 36. And even the modern miracle of the modern day age, 35W, that beautiful bridge over the Minnesota River south of Bloomington, is closed up because of water over the approaches.
The governor issued a statement, and KSTP was there.
I have just requested that the President's Office of Emergency Planning declare 11 more Minnesota counties as disaster areas and make them thereby eligible for emergency federal assistance. This brings to 57 the number of counties for which I have requested assistance. 46 counties have already been assured of federal aid by the president.
The situation grew worse. Joe Stroob reported on the crest levels to expect.
The forecasted crest of 30 feet at Mankato for the afternoon of April 10th will be a new high as far as the river goes. The previous high was 29.9 feet in April 1881.
KSTP issued more calls for volunteers, maintained hourly checks with state emergency headquarters, and cooperated with police and civil defense officials in warning sightseers to stay away.
If you have a specific mission, such as business or shopping in downtown St. Paul, you can get through and will be allowed to go through. The stores are all open for business as usual. Please observe the special emergency use streets and recognize that crossing them into the downtown area may cause a slight delay. But downtown St. Paul stores are open. You can get through and will be allowed to go through to shop and do business as usual, but please stay out if you are only sightseeing.
And in Minneapolis, fear grew for the bridges.
We are watching the rise of water on the Mississippi very closely. We're predicting now a 21-foot flood crest, and we're as of tonight at 18.5. A 21-foot flood crest is going to affect, to a great degree, manufacturing, industrial sections along the river. We don't anticipate a great deal of effect as far as residential sections are concerned, although there are isolated sections that we must be careful and watch very carefully. One of the other problems we have is the continual watch that we have on our bridges, and I'd like to stress that our engineering department is watching the bridges day and night for any floating debris that might weaken them, and we have on full-time duty our Civil Defense Police Reserve who are guarding the approaches to the bridges, and if there were any question at all of structural damage, the bridges would be shut off and traffic would be rerouted until the bridges were declared safe.
And there were rescues, dramatic, heartwarming, and heroic.
Seven persons stranded atop buildings by the rising floodwaters in Delano were rescued by a Navy helicopter from the Naval Air Station, Twin Cities, Minneapolis, early this forenoon. Answering a call from the Delano Sheriff's Office, a Navy SH-34J helicopter departed the Naval Air Station at 7:45 a.m.
Some kids around the bank pointed to the general spot where he was, so I kind of combed the creek they were looking for him, and I saw his glove caught my eye. It was somewhere near the surface, and so I reached down and I felt his arm, so then I picked him out of the water. And,
it's mid-morning, two service station workers managed to hail the passing motorist to borrow his boats to save two Mankato men whose small craft had capsized on the northern edge of the city. Minutes later, a Navy helicopter plucked an 80-year-old man who had been missing since yesterday from the top of a farm shed amid the swirling waters of the Blue Earth near Rapidan.
Everywhere the water was rising. The Rum and the Crow hit record levels north of the Twin Cities. The Duck headed north and to the south. Minneapolis and St. Paul declared themselves in a state of emergency. Record levels on five rivers and more to come. Staffers covered hundreds of miles, reporting the flood in the middle of the second week. A presidential visit was reported from beginning to end, including the chief executive's comments from the banks of the Mississippi and St. Paul.
Governor Urbach, Senator McCarthy, Senator Mondale, Congressman Card, Congressman Frazier, McGregor, Olson, Key, Langdon, Governor Noel, Governor Keith, Governor Milliken, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and Miss Chancellor. So I would pledge to you today that along with your distinguished congressional delegation, the members of both parties, your governor, your state officials, and your very able vice president, that we will all do everything we can. We will do it as promptly, as efficiently, as useful as possible to render the maximum amount of aid in this crucial hour that the federal government can render.
On the following day, the governor is going to Winona. KSTP Radio is going with him. And we hear a series of reports on preparedness from Mayor Rudy Ellings. First, on the storm sewers.
Right now, we are starting to experience internal troubles in the storm sewers are starting to kick right up through the manholes, and we're starting to flood certain areas on the streets. We're doing our best to hold them down with sandbags, and we also got these prefabricated manholes we're setting right on top and throwing sandbags into those and sandbagging around in an effort to hold the water down.
And then on the dikes.
Things are going very well as far as building of the dike. Of course, it's a tremendous operation, considering that we have constructed, I think, about 10 miles of dike.
And finally, on the cost of the project.
Originally, I figured it would just be a few thousand dollars when it first started. Of course, we didn't know at that time it was going to be cresting at 21 and a half feet. But I can tell you this, I know one thing, that we've already spent about $200,000 on sacks alone. And the equipment that we have, I have no idea what the rental will be on that. If you noticed when we were up there on Prairie Island, there were at least five ukes running there, bulldozers, front-end loaders, paydozers, and hundreds of trucks.
The flood was nearly 2 weeks old, and the governor was going strong.
The governor continues to tour the state. We asked him a moment ago, when, sir, are you going to slow down? He said, stick with me. Tomorrow I may go to East Grand Forks. This is Don Beeler with the governor's party in Winona.
The Red River was flooding to the north, near Crookston at East Grand Forks. And sure enough, the governor went, and KSTP's Tom Edwards went with him.
Tonight, the governor indicates he will ask disaster designation for a total of 49 counties, and says the original $20 million damage estimate is growing rapidly. For instance, wear and tear on state trunk highways alone is set at $13 million. This is Tom Edwards, KSTP News, just back from East Grand Forks.
The rum crested and flowed into the Mississippi. The crow crested in the dikes held at Rockford and Delano. And the water flowed into the Mississippi. And the crisis neared as the St. Croix swept toward Stillwater.
Numerous homes and summer houses along the river are already underwater. This is Tom Ocker, KSTP News in Stillwater.
And the mayor took drastic action. He cleared the streets of all but emergency personnel.
We only have three streets, and then we start to hit the hills. And of course, with the conditions the way they are downtown, if we had a bunch of sightseers here, a great many of them, if we had a fire where our space is limited, we couldn't get equipment to them. Then, too, if we had a dike break, which would run that water, I believe, way up into 2nd Street now, and we wouldn't be able to get trucks there.
And the river swept on.
Stillwater is still alert, but optimistic. This is Brooks Henderson, KSTP News.
Focus on the Mississippi and Winona.
The big question now is whether or not the dikes will hold. If they do hold and the river crest does not go over the expected crest of 20 feet, Winona could be saved from disaster. However, the Weather Bureau in La Crosse reports the crest may come sooner, may go higher, and with longer lasting duration. This is Bob Warren reporting in Winona for KSTP.
3 inches of snow accumulated at dikage in Winona. Wabashaw is isolated. And KSTP newsmen are pulled through 21 inches of roaring river into the isolated town. They use a jeep and a fully loaded dump truck to accomplish the task. Helicopters were standing by in case of trouble. On to Winona, where the dikes are holding. The next day was April 18th, Easter Sunday. On this Easter Sunday, a priest blessed the youngsters on the Stillwater Dikes.
Okay, kids, you've got real serious business to do. You kids have been tremendous now this whole week. And we want to pat you on the back for all your work. You're great. And when you get your food, go eat it fast and get back to work, because we have to get this work done as quickly as possible. But don't screw around. Don't get in each other's way. Just do the work as best you possibly can. So now, remember, this can be dangerous for you, so watch your step. Why don't you all just bow your head, and I'll ask God to bless you, our whole city, to avert devastation from our town. May the blessing of Almighty God, the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, descend upon you and remain forever. Amen.
A floodwalker talks with KSTP's Dave Sheehan on a nearly insurmountable problem.
Having a pretty good Easter Sunday, then, all things considered.
I'm happy about that. It just dawned on me it was Easter Sunday, and we didn't have any jelly beans here at Control Center. We had to mail some of those out. We got a hold of some, and so it's a little more Eastery here, let's put it that way.
Able-bodied men are patrolling the dikes. They are not in church. They arrive in the early hours of Easter morning in Winona to relieve the solitary men in black, the brothers of St. Mary's who have passed the cold night on the Sandbag Mountains. Jim Getz reports on the Easter Sunday situation.
The 25,000 people of Winona, Minnesota have been able to maintain a precarious truce with Old Man River, who now stands 15 to 20 feet higher than normal and is still rising with the crest expected to be on Tuesday. This noon from the Vatican in Rome, a cablegram arrived in Winona, wherein Pope Paul VI sent his prayers and blessings for the efforts being extended. That effort, nearly 10 miles of earthen dike, 25 feet high, about 30 feet wide, 2,000 men, 1,000 pieces of equipment, over a million sandbags, and $400,000 to $700,000, and the work has just begun. Local churchgoers have traded in their Easter finery for work clothes, as local ministers ask all able-bodied people to report for dike work rather than church services on Easter Sunday.
And Ed Cairo followed with this report.
And the pressure is now so strong, it's forcing water into the city's storm sewer system, popping off manhole covers, blistering the streets, and forming numerous ponds in city intersections. Civil Defense Headquarters is quietly busy, routing people, sandbags, sand, earth, equipment, as the work to hold back the river continues. The level of the Mississippi has up to 20.30 feet at this hour, and residents are rising to meet it.
The dikes hold in Winona. The crisis passes. Upstream families begin the agonizing process of returning to their homes. Meticulous housewives begin cleaning. Mud on the second floors in hundreds of river towns. But the rivers are falling, and the worst is over. The coverage of the cleanup operations will continue. 57 counties have been declared disaster areas, and everywhere there is silt and mud and flotsam and debris. The dikes are quipped, and the trucks no longer hurtle through the streets. The shortwave radios are silent, and emergency centers are vacant. The rivers are now falling rapidly on Thursday, the 22nd. In Chaska, a worker bends over a box, attaches a cap and fuse to the last remaining stick of dynamite, lights it, and hurls the charge far out over the river. It's exploded with a muffled roar. The flood is over. This has been a presentation of KSTP Radio News.